Aren't they beautiful? I love how with Advent we have the images and the art as sort of a backdrop for this, and it becomes an important part of the worship, an important part of the preparation, and it just like worship draws us in as far as like using our sense of hearing. I think that the art pulls us in visually, and our theme today is the theme of hope, and the candle representing truth, representing the word, the light coming into the darkness, that this light gives us hope, gives us perspective, helps us to see. And in many ways, I think that hope is similar to gratitude, a lens that we're invited to look at the world through. There's a quote that's attributed to Einstein where he says, you know, you can either look at the world as if nothing is miraculous or if everything is miraculous. And really, based on just that simple starting point, it's going to radically affect how we see, what we see. And this becomes part of the invitation. As we begin Advent, we see Christmas as a way of understanding not only life on this world for us, but for each one of us individually. Our story is somehow caught up in this story, that the meaning and the longings of our hearts are answered in this story, and that our life gets swept up in it. We're invited to look at life through this lens. I thought I would begin with a poem. And we have no PowerPoint because our computer's updating. Yeah. So, again, these just give us an opportunity to, you're going to have to just listen carefully rather than follow along visually. And it's a good exercise for us. So, but this is by one of my favorite poets, Richard Wilbur. And he starts with this verse from Luke 19 that says, "And some of the Pharisees from among the multitude said unto him, Master, rebuke the disciples. And he answered and said unto them, I tell you that if these should hold their peace, the stones would immediately cry out." And he writes, "A stable lamp is lighted, whose glow shall wake the sky. The stars shall bend their voices, and every stone shall cry. And every stone shall cry, and straw like gold shall shine. A barn shall harbor heaven, a stall become a shrine. This child through David's city shall ride in triumph by. The palm shall strew its branches, and every stone shall cry. And every stone shall cry, though heavy, dull, and dumb, and lie within the roadway to pave his kingdom come. Yet he shall be forsaken and yielded up to die. The sky shall groan and darken, and every stone shall cry. And every stone shall cry for stony hearts of men. God's blood upon the spearhead, God's love refused again. But now, as at the ending, the low is lifted high, the stars shall bend their voices, and every stone shall cry. And every stone shall cry in praises of the child by whose descent among us the worlds are reconciled." Is that sweet? And this story of Christmas is really one of this enormous rescue plan of God's that has begun before the creation itself, that unfolds in this beautiful act where God comes down as one of us. We call this moment the incarnation, and it's a way where all of the creation is sanctified. It's found worthy in God's eyes. In this outpouring of love that begins with the coming of God as a child, where the author ends up being born into the story itself. I like how Peter Kreft says, when we meet Jesus, we're not just meeting another character in the story. It's not Frodo meeting Gandalf, it's Frodo meeting Tolkien, right? That the author of the story has come right into the midst and written himself into the story itself. And at Advent, we're given again that lens to see through this idea of the divine coming into what it means for each one of us. And I think that that starts with hope. That in a world that is broken, in a world that is struggling, in a world filled with fear and anxiety, What we have is hope. Emmanuel, one of God's names, is God with us. And we've just finished a series on Psalm 23 talking about how God is our shepherd. God is with us. And that whole story, that whole beautiful poem, takes a whole nother level. We realize it's not just God in spirit with us, but God physically walking this earth with us. A God that we can touch. A God who not only suffers for us and is wounded for us, but whose wounds we could put our fingers in. This God comes to earth. And Advent, this idea of coming, this Adventus, as it is in Latin, is really about two comings. Christmas, where Jesus comes to earth, but then as well, this promise that he will come again. Jesus, on the final night that he's with his disciples, says, I go to prepare a place for you. And really, as we think about the story of our life, the longings of our heart, what we're reminded is that our world, our true home, lies out there in heaven. That we are made for something bigger and larger. And as we go through this life, our hearts are growing to become ready. Ready for heaven. And the way that happens, this way of seeing, is not just through this lens of hope, but this attentiveness, this searching that we're called to do. In Mark 13, and I think we might even have the words. Yes, well done, Gabe. Mark 13, it says, Jesus said, but of that day or that hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. Take heed, watch, for you do not know when the time will come. It's like a man going on a journey when he leaves home and puts his servants in charge, each with his work, and commands the doorkeeper to be on the watch. Watch, therefore, for you do not know when the master of the house will come, in the evening or at midnight or at a cock crow or in the morning. Watch, lest he come suddenly and find you asleep. And what I say to you, I say to all, watch. And Advent is this season of watchful waiting. That hope creates that attentiveness in our hearts. And that so often what happens to us is we grow weary or we get lost in the familiar and we fall to sleep. We get lulled by the things of this world. And this idea of watchfulness, attentiveness, it's something that we do with our hearts. It's driven by our desires. And keeping this story in mind is crucial, understanding that the longings that we face in this life, again, are temporary moments that we travel through and necessary to our own growth. We live in watchful anticipation. I love how Paul talks about this tension this creates, where he longs to be with Christ, and yet at the same time is drawn to the meaningful work that he's called here to do. He says in Philippians 1, for to me to live is Christ and to die is gain. But if I go on living in the body, this will mean fruitful labor for me. So what shall I choose? I do not know. I'm torn between the two. I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better indeed. But it is more necessary for you that I remain in the body. This tension, this is part of how we grow. There's almost like a healthy, holy restlessness, right? That's that longing for what will one day be fulfilled. And yet at the same time that we are drawn with compassion towards this world to do the work that we're called here to do, like Christ modeled on earth for us, how to truly live. How to come alive. And this idea of this tension, I think, is part of the hopefulness. I like how Lewis in Mere Christianity says that we're not drawn to heaven in this detachment from this world, but in fact, the ones who have made the most impact in this world seem to be drawn to both of these things at once. That we become committed to bringing that kingdom here on earth. But always with the reassurance that this world ultimately is not enough to fill our hearts. that it will always come up short, that the longing that is left in our hearts, the lack of satisfaction with this world, is a reminder that we're made for more. The first theme of Advent is hope, and Willard defines hope as this joyous anticipation of the good. If we could only walk through life with that lens, right? And how many of us do? How many of us instead are constantly anticipating things to go wrong, or fearful if they do, or preparing for the very worst case? That we walk around in our world filled with anxiety and fear. We walk around in our world constantly alarmed and on edge, which is why we're so exhausted. Our adrenal glands are like just going constantly, right? And at Christmas, we just ramp it up even more. And we spend so much money. So many things are happening right now in our schedules that we all end up getting sick and gaining weight and spending too much money. The gift of Advent is to go the other way, to simplify, to slow down, to reflect, to savor. And really, I think that is what it's about, is like every single morsel to take it in, to taste the goodness of it, to realize that even when we're going through difficulties, there's a gift and an invitation to see the divine in the ordinary, in the simple. I think sometimes spiritually we can just want God to come and match our level of expectation, like bigger, bigger, bigger. When in fact, I think God often wants us to slow ourselves down so we hear the whisper, that we be still and know that He is God. One of my favorite parts about the Christmas story is that almost everybody misses this event that happens. And I don't mean that with some sort of pleasure. I just think, isn't it ironic that God shows up and kind of slips in, but very few notice? I love how it's these shepherds that are the ones who see it. And again, I think of our time in Psalm 23 and just how God is so drawn to these shepherds. In Luke 2, it says, there were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks at night. An angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord showed around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all the people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah, the Lord. This will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in clothes and lit cloths and lying in a manger. Suddenly, a great company of the heavenly host appeared with the angel, praising God and saying, glory to God in the highest heaven, and on earth, peace to those on whom His favor rests. When the angels had left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, let's go to Bethlehem and see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about. Now again, if we were strategizing this grand entrance, right, we wouldn't go to shepherds. Nobody listened to these guys anyways. They couldn't even testify in court. They're just like seen as like the bottom of the food chain. And yet they're the ones that get the front row seat. And this is not surprising to us if you know anything about Jesus. This is what He did. He would go to a party and sit at the worst table. And yet everybody in that party would wish they were actually sitting at that table now. He would sit with the worst and bring to it joy. And see, this way of having hopefulness in life involves us learning to see this way, to see like shepherds, those who are kind of on the outskirts, those who are not included in, have the clearest vision. Because those things that give us status and value and make us feel like everything is secure in this world tend to numb us, to dull our vision, and to keep us from seeing clearly. That it's those that are in this posture of humility and dependence whose eyes are open and see these burning bushes all around them. As Jay and I were talking about this series, talking about this idea of these names of God and how this prophecy of Isaiah speaks these in, and there's four of them, and I was thinking they kind of fit nicely with the themes of Advent. In Isaiah 9:6, it says, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." And that word, Wonderful Counselor, which I was thinking, kind of, to me, like, ended up bleeding into this sermon a bit. That counselor really is this advisor, even a sort of kingly role. Although I think that, given our reading through Psalm 23, that counselor in many ways has become a shepherd for me. But thinking about hope is this realization that God has not only come and done this, but is traveling with us. That Jesus becomes our wonderful counselor. And that word wonderful, like, that's a word that in our day has become, I think, in many ways diminished. You go, "Oh, that's wonderful. How's the weather?" "It's wonderful. What a wonderful day." When in fact, it's got this sort of awe-inspiring texture to it. It really means beyond comprehension, like you'll never have it figured out. There's a story in Judges where Samson's dad has this encounter. We call these things theophanies, an encounter with God. And like you would do, like there's God there in your presence, and you would say, "Well, what's your name?" And in Judges 13:18, the angel of the Lord says, "Why do you ask my name? It's too wonderful for you to understand." Isn't that cool? It's too wonderful. Like, this is our counselor, this wonderful counselor. You're like, "Wonderful, what does that mean?" Oh, you can't understand. It's beyond your pay grade, right? This is like one of these things that, in other words, you can marvel at, but words escape. Ineffable might be a better word. An ineffable counselor, meaning there isn't the words. That's the only one we're left with. David, a shepherd, writes in Psalm 8, "When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is mankind that you're mindful of them? Human beings that you care for them. You have made them a little lower than the angels and crowned them with glory and honor. You made them rulers over the works of your hands. You put everything under their feet." This idea of hopefulness to me is wrapped up in this idea of wonder. That these are two things in our vision that tend to diminish over time. If you look at us, how we're born, right? We're born with this sense of mystery and awe and wonder. And that in familiarity and through sorrow and disappointment, through life itself, these things tend to fade or grow weary. And hopefulness becomes like a muscle that we exercise. Wonder becomes a discipline that we're actually going outside and looking up to the heavens and marveling at what is out there. The ones that are filled with wonder and mystery end up being the ones that hear the angels. Everybody else is sitting inside, comfortable. And Jesus comes down into this place of discomfort. And it's not that we go out of our way seeking discomfort, but that we realize that in those places as well, it's sacred, maybe even more sacred. That when we enter into places like that stable, kind of pushed aside, what we find is something divine. And the shepherds go from this angelic chorus to this tiny little stable manger, and they see the King, they see God himself. Too wonderful to wrap their heads around. We have to be looking carefully to see it. We have to be watching those shepherds out there, cold, humble, looking at the stars, realize that God comes in and says, "You have such tremendous worth. as David writes, what is man, and yet you have made him a little lower than the angels? And this is part of the depth and mystery of Christmas. I love in that one hymn where it says, you appeared and the soul found its worth. And this is what Christmas tells us, is that even the ordinary in God's eyes are extraordinary. And also the extraordinary are actually rather ordinary. That all of us find our worth, our greatness in God. And yet not as some way of being above or superior to, but instead this deep worth of each one. In order for us to watch requires that when we're uncomfortable, we continue to have hope and have the eyes to see. I think it's interesting when we talk about like abundant life. I was reading this book on time, and they're saying comfortability actually speeds time up. I mean, all of us are worried about not having enough time, right? But what we long for is comfort, and yet when we're comforted, what happens is time goes really fast. Have you noticed this? That when we find ourselves in a place of dependency or struggle, all of a sudden time has this tendency to really slow down. It pulls us into the moment. And that thing, that ability to really savor the goodness and the abundance of life, happens often in the discomfort as opposed to the comfort. We had this awesome Thanksgiving, and part of it was just this total adventure. Terry was with us because Regina's in London, and so it was a gift having Terry with us. And we went up to my parents' house, and it turns out it just dumped snow, like a foot and a half of snow while we were there. Knocked the power out, which means cold turkey. Cold turkey. But we spent that day like playing in the snow and walking around. We're like huddled over like candles for dinner. It was cold in the house, but we had these like little fires. And, you know, in the dark there, eating cold turkey, you're like, oh, this is the best. And I think sometimes that truth, again, it's like counterintuitive. That we want this like more to try to fill this need. And I think oftentimes God is trying to slow us down to show us that less is actually more. That we're not just enduring this life, but when we slow down, we're noticing there are angels all around us, that God has a plan, that we have a good shepherd, that we have this wonderful counselor, that he's there with us in the high points, at the table, and also in the valley and the shadow. And when we know that, we walk through this life in hope. I think it was it one of our sermons, was it Jay? Did you preach on going through the valley? Love that. We go through the valley, but we walk with our counselor. And as we do, we're able to savor the richness of these moments. Even when we are lacking for the comforts, our eyes are open. I was thinking about this the other day. I took Gabe down to Trestles for the first time. Gabe's been learning how to surf, and it was like one of these days, and it was windy. And as we were getting there and standing up there at the top, I said to one of the guys coming up the trail, like, how is it? He's like, yeah, it's blown out. I'm like, oh, we're just going to go anyways. And we went down and had one of the best times surfing. So fun. And there was nobody out. And the waves were actually way better than those guys were saying. And like, as we were getting out, Gabe was like, why did those guys say it was blown out? And I said, well, they're used to it being perfect. And I think sometimes this is what happens to us as well in a season like this, is we fill it with so much and are constantly disappointed. And hope has this way of slowing down and appreciating and valuing. God shows up in all of these moments with joy, even in the midst of the sorrow. Jesus comes in this way that is so unassuming, so humble, and yet there to be seen for those with eyes to see. In the same way, we are invited to look at our life through such a lens. I like how one of my favorite guys, whose name I can barely pronounce, Teilhard de Chardin. His first name's Pierre. I should just call him Pierre. Pierre says this: creatures are all around me with their disappointing weaknesses and terrifying powers. And this is each one of you here in this room. Each one of you with disappointing weaknesses and terrifying powers. Christmas is about God coming in and saying, I'm going to redeem each of your hearts, bring you to life, so that your life might be filled with glory. And this is the journey that each one of you are on. This is the story. And Jesus comes in, the author, into each one of your hearts and begins rewriting your story. And it's one that's incomprehensible to us. And God's going to take us on all kinds of turns that we're not expecting or not ready for. But we're being shepherded. We have this wonderful counselor. And so following this shepherd becomes like following breadcrumbs. There's a book that I just read recently where the author of it, she's talking about this, noticing these little crumbs that God leaves for us. And it requires us to be in the moment, to slow down, to notice them. It's the way that God like woos our hearts to himself. And they're these acts of love, and they're tender. But they come in like this unhurried posture. We're going through life without anxiety. We're able to see and notice. We go through our life with expectation. All of a sudden, there God is in small little ways. But it requires us to be living our life with pause. And this, again, is part of the expectation of waiting in Advent. I haven't seen the movie yet. Anybody seen the Fred Rogers movie that's out? And apparently, so I haven't seen it, so I could be wrong, but a friend of mine was telling me that there's a moment where he just says to his friend at the table, let's pause. And then they do that in the movie. Is that true? Yeah, a minute. Think about that. So do like 30 seconds. For 30 seconds, I want you to think about the fact that God knows you so intimately, that you are his lamb, that you are his child, and that he delights in you. Let's do that for 30 seconds. Go. All right, good job. I know, you just got started, right? Honestly, it takes a good 20 minutes, really. But to sit in that place of stillness, right, you realize it's hard. And how often when we have any interrupted space, we're just like right here. Right? And all this does is tells us what we need or what's missing or what's wrong in the world. What instead, if we take those quiet moments and learn how to remain in God's presence, to see the world through that hope? I like how Paul says it's tension, like this longing for heaven, this remaining in earth. God is doing this work in us. And sometimes it's painful. Sometimes it takes struggle. I think the image of transformation, it's something that Paul is going to describe in Romans 8 as like childbirth. He says, I consider our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. For the creation waits in eager expectation for the children of God to be revealed. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the freedom and glory of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. Not only so, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. But hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what they already have? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently. And this waiting has got this tension to it, and yet we're invited to remain, to let this tension do its work. That in this place of tension, God is preparing us for heaven. And like it says in Isaiah 65, see, I will create new heavens and a new earth. The former things will not be remembered, nor will they come to mind, but be glad and rejoice forever in what I will create. For I will create Jerusalem to be a delight and its people a joy. I will rejoice over Jerusalem and take delight in my people. The sound of weeping and of crying will be heard in it no more. And this beautiful picture to me is what we savor during Advent as we're reminded to wait and to live in this place of hope. And as we do, this hope matures. We rediscover our wonder. We set our mind not on the end of this life, but on the life to come. And what this gives in us is a lightness and a joy. I like this, how Chesterton, he says, it's only like in middle age that we really get this. He says, the power of hoping through everything, the knowledge that the soul survives its adventures, that great inspiration comes to the middle-aged. God has kept that good wine until now. It's from the backs of the elderly gentlemen that the wings of the butterfly should burst. There's nothing that so much mystifies the young as the consistent frivolity of the old. They have discovered their indestructibility. They are in their second and clearer childhood, and there is a meaning in the merriment of their eyes. They have seen the end of the end of the world. Isn't that good? They have seen the end of the end of the world. I have some questions for you, and then we're going to go to the Lord's table and celebrate again this incarnation as we take these physical elements and realize that God is here. Question one, what do you hope for? What are the longings of your heart? And this greatness has been put in you, this glorious story that God is asking you to grow into. What are those deeper longings? Not the trivial ones that we try to satisfy by numbing, but the deeper ones. Two, have you asked yourself why you're hoping for those things? Is there a deep or is there a deeper hope or longing? Three, where do you find yourself taking shortcuts to happiness? Where do you find yourself becoming cynical, cut off, detached from hope? In both areas, what would a way forward look like? And lastly, where have you become weary? What is causing you to groan? How might the Spirit be working to assist you in carrying the burden? And hope, I think, in many ways becomes like a midwife for us in those groanings. As this new creation is birthed in us, God's Spirit comes along in His comfort and meets us right there, bringing us into this new life. Merry Christmas, you guys. I'm looking forward to the Advent season with you. I hope you can come back tonight for our service.